This is Vermont Edition. I'm Steve Zandin for Jane Lindholm today. Many expected the current legislative session to be over, but lawmakers remain in Montpelier trying to craft a compromise on teacher health plans that both they and the governor can accept. The issue is reducing the cost for health care benefits for teachers. Differences lie in how, and particularly in concerns over collective bargaining, the ability of teachers to negotiate their contracts with local districts. Should that remain something that the local school boards do, or should it be split up as the governor is demanding, with health care negotiated by the state at his administration level? Democratic leaders have rolled out a number of compromises. There have been lots of discussions behind doors, I'm sure. And just this hour, as our program airs live at noon, House and Senate leaders held a news conference to announce the latest. And fresh from that is VPR's Peter Hirschfeld, who's been covering this story for Vermont Public Radio. Peter, what did they have to say?
Well, as you note, Steve, this is a drama that's been unfolding over the last 3 or 4 weeks in the State House, and it looks like we just got our climax. House Speaker Mitzi Johnson and Senate President Tim Ash sent a notice out to reporters that they were going to be holding a press availability at noon, and we arrived with bated breath, waiting to find out whether they were going to bring us news of an attempt to continue working with the governor to try to find an agreement that would avoid a budget veto, which he's promised he'll do if they don't come around to his way of thinking, or if they're throwing in the towel on those talks and just going to proceed with their own plan. And it is sounds like the latter. They said they're still holding out hope that they might be able to find a compromise with the governor. But they say it just looks like that is not a possibility at this point. They say this is Tim Ash said this is less a negotiation than a dictation. They feel like this is one man who is forcing legislators to bend to his will on this issue, and they say they're just not willing to go there.
Does this mean we mentioned there have been a lot of ideas floated in the legislature, the most recent yesterday outlined by House Speaker Mitzi Johnson. Does this mean that that just doesn't cut it for the governor?
It doesn't cut it for the governor. It's been fascinating to see Democratic lawmakers sort of contort themselves into these legislative proposals that I don't think 6 months ago any of them would have fathomed they would have been putting on the table. But because of the situation they find themselves in with this veto threat from Governor Phil Scott, they are grudgingly agreeing to do things that I think they're very uncomfortable doing. But those still have not won favor with Phil Scott. And what House Speaker Mitzi Johnson put on the table yesterday was a plan that would create some very strict parameters around what local school boards and teachers would be able to negotiate in the realm of teacher health benefits. It would basically confine them to a very narrow range that the speaker, that the governor, that the Senate president believe would yield this $26 million in health care savings. Mitzi Johnson said, you know, it still keeps it at the local level. They're still technically allowed to bargain, though we are putting some constraints on that. Even that, though, wasn't enough to win sign-off from Phil Scott.
You were at an event, I believe, earlier today that the governor attended. Did he have any comments about that?
He said there are three basic must-haves for him in anything he signs off on. One, it delivers $26 million a year in savings on health care plans. That's a key point. He says it needs to be health care plans because he says if the savings come from other elements of education budgets, it has the capacity either to erode education programming or districts are going to be able to pull off those savings, but not in a way that yields long-term cost reductions in the healthcare universe. The other thing Phil Scott says he wants now is parity across school districts on healthcare products. He wants every public school employee in the state to have the same basic health insurance plan. The third thing he says he wants is to get the issue of negotiating these health benefits off school boards' backs. He says this is something they're not really they don't have the resources or the actuarial sophistication to pull off in a way that his administration would if they were brought to a statewide contract. So those are the three basic things he wants.
The second and third points really make it clear that the governor wants that statewide negotiations on teacher health care benefits. And again, we mentioned there have been a number of legislative proposals, but they've all kept that control at the local level, even though the unions haven't liked or didn't like Mitzi Johnson's latest proposal.
They sure didn't like what Mitzi Johnson did. Phil Scott is saying there is one other way we could do this, and that would be to mandate via a piece of legislation what the health care plan is going to be. He admits that, yeah, this totally does away with collective bargaining entirely for that particular segment of the total compensation package the teachers are negotiating for at the bargaining table. But he says we don't need a statewide contract if the legislature is willing to simply reach in with legislation and dictate the terms of those health benefits packages from Montpelier.
So I think up till now there's been daylight between the House and Senate approaches to solving this, correct?
Absolutely.
Does today's meeting of the minds mean that there's a sort of joint agreement now by House and Senate leaders?
Well, that's the interesting thing. There is not a joint agreement on a specific proposal yet. And one of the fascinating elements of this debate is that every time the Senate comes up with something that it thinks might be able to satisfy the governor and they can get through their body, the House says, hey, this actually doesn't work for us. When House Speaker Mitzi Johnson put her plan out yesterday, it became pretty clear pretty quickly that not only did that plan not work for Governor Phil Scott, it also was very problematic to the Senate, which felt like it was an undue intrusion on the collective bargaining rights of teachers. And so the fact that Mitzi Johnson and Tim Ash came together today to say, look, we have mutually come to the conclusion that talks with Phil Scott are likely not going to yield a global resolution that we can all sign off on. But it does not mean that the House and the Senate have figured out what they're going to be able to agree on, and they're going to have key members of a conference committee gathering today to try to iron out the details of what that might look
like. So that coming together didn't represent, let's say, the Senate embracing Speaker Johnson's proposal?
It did not, and it's very unclear at this point what they're going to come out with, whether that plan will bear any resemblance at all to what they've thrown out previously. If they know now that the veto is coming, they're probably going to be far less likely to move forward with something that they feel is detrimental to teachers, to boards, to collective bargaining on the whole if they know that it's going to be met with a veto anyway.
Is what's likely to emerge something totally unlike the proposals we've seen up until now? Is there any way to tell?
I think you may see something of a hybrid. You know, the problem for lawmakers is they're going to have to come up with something that they feel wins the hearts and minds of the general public on this, right? They can't just say no to Phil Scott. They've got to come up with an alternative that looks appealing and attractive to folks, something that they look at and say, hey, that seems like a pretty common sense way to get to the same place that the governor wants to go without alienating all the constituencies that Governor Phil Scott would in the process. So they're going to have something pretty dramatic, something that would yield guaranteed savings in the healthcare system and education, but they're going to have to craft it in such a way that they bring on unions and other constituencies that they're going to want to have at their back when they do go do this veto showdown with Phil Scott.
Had the expectation been at the beginning of the day that there would be a proposal that lawmakers would be considering, say, this afternoon, and does the timeline now change?
No, I think it was clear as of yesterday that the House and the Senate were far apart, let alone the House and the Senate against the executive branch. So the timeline on all this is still somewhat unclear. They're down to a very small number of bills that they actually have to get across the finish line in order to be able to adjourn this session. But they're going to have to get some rule suspensions from House Republicans in order to adjourn this week if they want to do that. It's unclear whether House Republicans are going to go along with that. So despite the fact that we've had this clarifying moment in what has been a sort of muddled picture over the past few weeks does not necessarily mean that we're going to be out of here on Friday.
You mentioned that they've got to come up with something that wins the hearts and minds of the public and also wins the support of their constituencies. The ideas, particularly Speaker Johnson's ideas, we mentioned did not win the support of the unions, a key constituency for the Democrats. I mean, is it safe to say that whatever they come up with is going to be something the unions find more palatable?
It'll certainly be something they find more palatable than what Governor Phil Scott is asking. What the unions would really like is for everything to stay like it is right now. That's the – what they've been pushing for is the status quo. They say it isn't broke. Let's let things play out as they normally do, and we're confident that these savings will arrive anyway.
Well, how much support is there for that position among lawmakers?
Well, I'll point us back to a vote that occurred on the House floor, 2 or 3 weeks ago, that was essentially a proxy for a vote on the governor's proposal. It was a tie vote, 74-74, and in fact, the two members that were absent for that would have voted in favor of the governor's proposal. House Speaker Mitzi Johnson said yesterday that vote speaks volumes about where the Vermont House is at right now as it relates to this issue. She said a lot of folks in her caucus chose property tax relief over collective bargaining rights. And so this is not a clean-cut case where Democrats favor one position and Republicans favor another. There's an interesting alliance of Republicans, Blue Dog Democrats, and independents in the Vermont House that have really altered the dynamic around this.
I mean, is it safe to say at this point that the legislature's seems to be positioning itself to pass something that the governor is certainly going to veto?
Yes. And not only does it seem safe to say that the legislature has resigned itself to passing something that the governor isn't going to sign off on, but Governor Phil Scott said in no uncertain terms today that if he does not get a package from the legislature that meets his requirements, he will veto that budget. So that means this debate is not going away. It's simply being deferred for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whenever they decide to come back for a veto session. And the stakes are very high. July 1st is rolling around. That's the beginning of the next fiscal year. And there's a scenario where this veto showdown plays out in such a way that Vermont doesn't have a state budget in place on July 1st.
Everybody seems certain that there's no possibility of an override should the governor veto the budget.
Absolutely not. There are 150 members in the House. They need 100 votes to override a veto. Well, the simple math tells you that's unlikely because you got 53 Republicans who, by all accounts, are going to unite behind Phil Scott on this. And then, like I mentioned, you've got six independents that have supported the governor's plan, and you've got a couple dozen or 16 Democrats that are on record supporting his plan. Now, whether they change that position when push comes to shove in a veto vote, that could all change. But just even with the Republicans and the independents, Phil Scott can safely assume that his veto is going to be sustained.
Mm-hmm. Could you characterize the kind of tone of discussions between lawmakers and the governor up until now? And is this a significant shift in that tone?
It's fascinating. Publicly, they take the requisite digs at each other, and there's sort of the rhetorical sword fighting that goes on. What I've heard from people that have been a part of these talks is that when they're actually happening behind closed doors, things are calm. People are smiling. It's not screaming and fighting and slamming the door behind you on your way out. And I think that has something to do with the way these new leaders in Montpelier conduct themselves generally. Phil Scott is a laid-back, nice guy by all accounts, and he apparently maintains that air when he's involved even in these heated negotiations. So they are at loggerheads, and they are – it would be difficult to overstate how opposed they are to each other's approaches to this. That said, they're on great speaking terms, and in fact, as recently as this morning, Phil Scott met with House Speaker Mitzi Johnson and Senate President Pro Tem in the Speaker's office.
So this might be a one-off. We don't read into this with a new legislature and a new governor, something that sets the tone for discussions on any number of issues going forward.
It absolutely sets the tone. To have the return to divided government in Vermont be marked by a budget veto in the first year of that divided government, I think has huge implications down the line. And, you know, Phil Scott is showing a willingness to take things right to the edge if he isn't going to get the give from Democratic lawmakers that he wants. And if this is an approach that he uses in future sessions, it means we could be in for a lot more late session dramas.
Does he occupy the political high ground here, though, because he's got the ability to veto and the legislature doesn't have the ability to override? When something's got to give, does it got to give at the legislative end?
Well, that's the fascinating question that we're going to see answered when and if we do see a veto. We're going to find ourselves hurtling toward this July 1st date where presumably some pretty impactful things are going to happen if they don't get a budget in place. Now, I asked Phil Scott today, what begins to happen if we don't have a budget? Mm-hmm. He said, you know, I'm honestly not really sure exactly what that looks like right now. It didn't seem like House Speaker Mitzi Johnson or Senate President Pro Tem really had a grasp of the specific consequences of what happened. So they're going to have to figure out what that looks like. And of course, those pressures will add new dynamics.
These are going to be new factors
exactly.
They haven't had to contend with up until now. VPR's Peter Hirschfeld, thanks a lot.
Yeah, good to be with you, Steve.
You can follow all of VPR's State House reporting at VPR.net. You can listen to the House and Senate chambers on the VPR live stream also at VPR.net.